Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. The Irish Unity Dividend. What do you think are the key challenges facing Ireland today? And how can Unity address them? How might Irish Unity impact your life or the lives of those around you? Those are just some of the questions that my next guest is striving to answer in his new book called The Irish Unity Dividend. Delighted to say that Ben joins us. Ben Collins joins us live on the line now. Ben, good morning to you, sir.
Hi, Giles. Nice to meet you.
Good to have you with us as well. Whereabouts are you, and B, why are you so imminently qualified to write this particular book?
I'm in Belfast, the east of Belfast at the moment. I guess the reason why I'm qualified to write this book is something I've been thinking about for 30 years, really, since before the Good Friday Agreement. I personally have lived and worked in London, Edinburgh, Cardiff, Dublin, and back in Belfast, my home city. And I've just seen how things have evolved over time. I have a good understanding. I've worked in the healthcare sector. I've worked in the real estate sector. And I understand just how things work. I've worked with governments, politicians, stakeholders across all parts of the UK and Ireland. And really, it's just, I'm very much coming at this from an evidence-based point of view, looking at how we can make life better for people across the island, but particularly in Northern Ireland, which has really suffered through Brexit.
Yeah, you've just dropped the B word in the first 5 minutes, Ben. So congratulations on that one. As we call it in Spain, el Brexi. Just going back to that whole thing about since the Good Friday Agreement and whatever. I was a property editor of a property magazine in the early 90s, and I remember doing when Lagenside got going, and yes, it's the transformation that has taken place thus far has been quite remarkable. But it's very easy, I suppose, to sit back and go, okay, well, that's what that one sorted. And perhaps this is having worked around the UK, well, it still is, are able to, you can say, well, it's all very well to say this has been a success story, Belfast has changed, and it's now an incredible place to do business, etc. But we need to take that step further then, Ben?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think Northern Ireland has received a peace dividend to date from the Good Friday Agreement. The Republic of Ireland has really achieved an economic dividend, because if you look at the time of the signing of the Good Friday Agreement, the GDP, the economic growth in both parts of Ireland was largely equal. And now the Republic is not only significantly ahead of Northern Ireland, it's significantly ahead of the UK as a whole. And we see a lot of, as somebody who works in Dublin, because I currently am a joint owner of an independent strategic comms and public affairs agency in Belfast, but I work across the island, and I was in Dublin yesterday, for example, and it's really noticeable just the vibrancy, the economic vibrancy we have there. But if you look at Northern Ireland compared to the rest of the UK, we have the longest waiting lists in the UK. We have less money invested in education, in the arts, across so many different metrics. We're really struggling. And I just think that there is much more that we can do, but it's not. The Good Friday Agreement has been good, because prior to the Good Friday Agreement, I come from very much a British unionist background, but I was determined I wasn't going to be forced into United Ireland by violence or threats of violence. But really, it was the Good Friday Agreement changed that, and I could look at things differently. And I think it is the two aspects of this. It's about identity and it's about quality of life. And I think things are evolving in both ways.
Because Ben, please feel free to call me up on this one, because I'm going to tread very carefully now, because the Ulster, Northern Ireland is a part of the United Kingdom. And however, in kind of the way that Gibraltar is kind of part of Britain as well, because it is, but it isn't. So if you were to take somebody from the mainland and drop them into Northern Ireland, it has always been treated, quote unquote, differently in its political structure with the parties there. And you mentioned that you come from a unionist background, and that is a whole other kettle of fish and the sectarian lines. And I know the sectarianism in certain parts of the UK, i.e., my mother's from Glasgow, so I'm aware of that as well. But it has always been treated differently, and the political structure is different as well with Stormont, etc. So it really is time to have another hard look, Ben.
Yeah, no, look, I think it is different. It's been different since partition in 1921. We had a Northern Ireland Parliament was set up then, and largely so many of the issues were just devolved to the Northern Ireland Parliament as it was then. But it wasn't a good place to be. Partition itself created two two states that had a majority religion. In Northern Ireland, it was Protestants. In the Republic of Ireland, it was Catholics. And it wasn't a good place to be because you want to have more an integrated approach and a more joined up approach of different religions living together. Now, the Republic has moved on an awful lot and it is much more of a pluralist, outward looking, almost a post-nationalist society in many ways. Northern Ireland, we have seen, yes, absolutely, it's brilliant to have the peace that we have, but there's just so much more that we could do economically. And I mean, I'm not an economist, but I know that having two of something is less efficient and more expensive than having one of something. And that's why we need to go for an integrated approach. This is what I set out in my book.
Yep.
We need to go for an integrated approach on things like healthcare. We had the Northern Ireland chair of the British Medical Association two Saturdays ago. They had GPs had a conference where they said, we need to leave the NHS. It just isn't working. And their chair put out an ex-post and said, we need to look at having an all-Ireland GP contract. And this is somebody, he's also from East Belfast. He's not being political at all. He's just saying, from a healthcare point of view, the current structures aren't working. And across healthcare, across energy, you know, we have an emerging all-Ireland economy, but across things like education, we need to take an all-Ireland approach, and that's what's going to help. And you're right, Northern Ireland has been different to the rest of the UK. There hasn't been a unionist MP from Northern Ireland as part of the British cabinet since the Second World War. That's 80 years outside the corridors of power. And what we need to do is to bring political unionism into the Irish political mainstream and to really bring things together and to work together on healthcare, education, housing, because it is different to Britain. You know, I was somebody from a unionist background, lived and worked in Britain, and I mean this in the best possible way. I arrived in Britain, whatever the sense of Britishness was, it wasn't, it was a mirage.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I thought it would be. And it is different. Nothing made me feel more Irish than living in Britain. And I don't mean that in any negative way.
No, but this is the thing as well. And if you say you're from Northern Ireland, I mean, we've moved on from the 30 years ago and the troubles, etc. But you still got that strange kind of look, don't you? Because people think, oh, you're a unionist, therefore you are the son of Reverend Ian Paisley. And if you, or the son of Gerry Adams, that sort of thing. And that just shows that, those on the mainland don't understand the specifics of Northern Ireland. But also there's a whole generation now of young Irish men and women, and whatever else you want to identify of, because hey, it's 2025, and they are thinking to themselves, well, and you will always get the cases to go who will say, right, well, this is, you know, there will be, you know, I'm standing on this particular piece of rock and putting my flag here. But in the majority, the people who are looking to Europe, and Ireland, more than any other, you could say, have embraced the concept of Europe in a huge way. And then they must be thinking now, north of the border, well, this is, you know, why should something literally 2 minutes in my car away from me get all these advantages whilst I have at least one arm time behind my back?
Well, that's it. You look at inward investment. The Republic has done really well in terms of foreign direct investment. And one of the major factors of that is because of their corporation tax rate, which is now 15% for most companies. Northern Ireland, Belfast, which is only 100 miles north of Dublin, our corporation tax rate is 25%. So that's an immediate challenge. But also we have all the barriers to trade with the rest of the EU that you don't have in the Republic of Ireland. You know, the Republic can be the gateway to Europe for US, Canadian investment in the way that Northern Ireland can't, because we don't have that unfettered access to the rest of the EU. Yes, the arrangements that Northern Ireland's got under the Windsor Framework are slightly better in terms of goods and in terms of goods, but it's very limited. It's nowhere near as good as having full EU membership. And you're right about the sense of Irishness. You know, we have, in terms of the voting base, about 40% vote for unionists, 40% vote for nationalists, and 20% in the middle who are non-aligned. But those people are increasingly, they are pro-European by large. And as you said, the majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain part of the EU. And that's one of the key things. We know the European Council agreed back in 2017 that if Northern Ireland votes to join the rest of Ireland, we will automatically be part of the EU. There's no qualification process. We will be part of the EU immediately after we vote for unity.
And that would send a shockwave that, whether you liked it or lumped it, would bring a united Ireland close together, because, you know, I mean, apart from all my Scottish family going, right, we're going to have another crack at this. But you see what I'm saying, because we could say that we are, the island is making those moves, you know, a young, tech savvy nation who are doing, Because the way that the Republic has come on from something that was mired back in, you could say, mired back in pretty much the 19th century with the political and the church state that was going on at the time, has suddenly come on and embraced their young people, embraced the potential that they have, and so obviously this is going to look much more attractive to somebody who thinks himself as a young European.
Young people are increasingly confident and embracing the Irish identity. Even in my own area of East Belfast, you have East Belfast GAA, a Gaelic Athletic Association club, which plays Gaelic football, hurling, and that's hugely popular. You've got Irish language classes in East Belfast that are sold out. You have Irish language primary schools that are that are oversubscribed, and I just think that, and then you have bands like Kneecap, where people from all backgrounds are going along, embracing, singing along to Irish language songs. And I just think people want to embrace that. And they want the opportunity to be able to live and work across 27 EU countries. Now, if you've got a British passport, you can live and work in Ireland because of the common travel area and the arrangements around that. But you can't live and travel around the other 26 countries. And it just, the Irish passport, Irish citizenship, membership of the EU, it opens a whole load of doors you can't get in Brexit Britain.
So what are the sort of the nuts and bolts then of it? Where are you looking, Ben, to begin this? I mean, obviously this is all sort of like blue sky thinking or whatever. And
the key thing is you need to have a plan, and we need to prepare in advance. There are lots of academics and lots of think tanks that are doing work in this and looking at different options about how would an all-Ireland healthcare system work? How can we improve the all-Ireland economy and all that sort of stuff? But really, the Irish government has to take the lead on this. In the same way, after Brexit, they set up a whole series of sector forums and engaged with people across the island of Ireland. They need to be doing that now because we want to avoid the chaos of Brexit. We've seen what that was like. People voted for things without having a clear idea beforehand. I have family members and friends, close friends, who voted for Brexit. And here we are nearly a decade later, and you put three Brexit voters in the room together, they'll tell you three completely contradictory reasons why they voted for it. And we don't want that to happen. And I know that there are deep concerns. There's fear amongst people, my unionist brothers and sisters, about this. The best way that we can address those fears is to sit down and say, right, this is what Irish unity is going to mean for healthcare. This is what it's going to mean for education. This is what it's going to mean for housing, because there are huge issues we have to face across all of these areas. And the best way we can do that is by adopting an all-Ireland approach. And I think it's also about, we've got to put a package of proposals together for the Protestant Unionist Loyalist community and say, this is how your rights are going to be safeguarded. The Good Friday Agreement will continue after unity. The European Convention on Human Rights, despite what Nigel Farage is saying in Westminster, that is tied up with the Good Friday Agreement, and that will continue in United Ireland. Those are two things that are going to provide a framework for safeguards for our unionist friends.
Do you think? There's two things on this one. Do you think that Dublin has the, surely Dublin has the nuance to understand this, because this has been going on for over 100, 200 years since we had somebody had RMs, for goodness sake. So therefore, the modern situation, political situation in Dublin is able to understand the nuances of Northern Ireland, perhaps in a way that, again, 50 years ago it wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah, I think so. I think there is a good understanding, and I think it's about there's an appreciation. The current Irish government has set up in 2020 what was called the Shared Ireland Fund, and so they have already invested €1 billion in cross-border infrastructure, and they've promised to invest another €1 billion in this current mandate. And that's really helpful. That helps a lot. And I think it's about putting it in practical terms. We know that there are emotional issues, but really it's about increasing the resilience of the island. If you look at issues like healthcare, we had the COVID-19 pandemic where we were taking completely contradictory approaches on a small island at different times, where the Irish government was locking down, the Northern Ireland executive couldn't lock down because Boris Johnson wanted to open up and we didn't have the funds. So it's things like that. We know that because of the climate change, there are increasing possibilities of pandemics. And therefore, we wanted to be able to take an all-island approach in healthcare and protect the most vulnerable. And the best way we can do that is taking that all-island approach. We know that the Irish economy in Dublin in particular is overheating. We have additional capacity in Northern Ireland. A lot of highly skilled, educated people like me who went across to Britain, but in future in the United Ireland, they'll be able to grow their future and their economy on the island of Ireland. So it's going to benefit every part of Ireland and make it better.
And presumably this is too, I mean, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here. Fisheries, agriculture, as a United Ireland policy, this would be a stronger situation here.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you look at Northern Ireland currently, things like the seabed, a lot of land, that's all currently owned by the Crown Estate. That will all transfer to the new United Ireland state. And there's huge investment that we can get in there. We know that Ireland, the Republic, does very well in terms of data centres. About 24% of their electricity is currently used in data centres. But there's a huge potential in terms of offshore wind development, which we haven't realised at all in Northern Ireland's territorial waters. But we can really take a really resilient all-island approach in terms of electricity, in terms of how we deliver social and affordable housing. I worked in the housing association sector for 5 years as a chief executive for the Housing Federation in Northern Ireland. And we can deliver that better on an all-island basis using modern methods of construction by strategically delivering it across the island, using unneeded public sector buildings and land that already has the water and wastewater infrastructure in place. And we can deliver the housing that's needed for people. So again, we don't have young people leaving the island against their desires.
And presumably you need to get this going within the next couple of years, because if you're looking at the polls, you're looking at the polls, there you go, there's Ben straight with an answer. Because if you're looking at the polls in the UK at the moment, and we know that referendum are a bad idea, trust me. And certain of us weren't able to vote because we'd lived overseas for 15 years, which is a bugbear that we will never forgive the British government for. But if the election were held tomorrow and Nigel Farage and Reform UK took over in Westminster, their view of Ireland full stop, one might argue, is harking back to the 18th century.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a friend of Ireland, he's not a friend of the EU, and he's not a unionist. He doesn't care about Northern Ireland. He has said that he expects there to be United Ireland in the future, and this is another reason why they need to prepare. We do not have the time for procrastination. We need to start preparation, because he could come in and in the first 6 months say, you know what, I'm going to give you a border poll, and whether we vote for a United Ireland or against it, it'll cause chaos. It'll cause chaos for the island of Ireland. It'll cause chaos for Europe. Because what we've got to remember is the EU is the best peace project that the continent of Europe has ever seen, and it's brilliant. And they played a key role in the Good Friday Agreement. And I did not want my European citizenship being stripped away by him. And he, like his friend Trump in America, is very keen on trying to unpick the EU, because that is the best way for both peace and security across the continent of Europe. And that's where we need to prepare now, so that if he does call a border poll at short notice, we're ready for it.
I hadn't thought about that, but absolutely, Ben. Thank you for that. So what's the first steps then, Ben? This is a call, not so much of a call to arms, but a call to get the wheels moving, to make people aware that it's not just about a thing about where you see yourself and whether you see yourself as Irish or whatever. This is the benefits will far outweigh what could be seen as something being held back.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And look, John Doyle, an academic from Dublin City University, did some analysis on this, and he showed that the initial costs in year one of a transition to United Ireland will only cost €3 billion, because there's so many costs that people try to include, things like the nuclear deterrent, the annual interest payment on UK national debt. Those are things that a United Ireland and Northern Ireland leaving the UK and joining the United Ireland won't be liable for. So the costs are a lot less. But yeah, what we need is the Irish government to set up a citizens assembly, or a series of citizens assembly. And I would suggest they should also then be setting up a sector forum. I think they need to say, look, this is about preparation. We know that the gap between those in favour of staying part of the UK and being part of United Ireland is only about 6 points in the latest opinion poll, and that's changing. There's a demographics that the unionist voter base is older than the nationalist voter base, but also there's that increasing middle ground of people who want to look at things differently, want to be part of the EU, and there are also a growing minority of people like myself from a unionist background that are increasingly open to the idea of Irish unity. And that's why I wrote this book. I was happy to put my head above the parapet, because I have lots of people who tell me, who come from a similar background, who tell me privately on a daily basis, I agree with what you're saying, I'm interested in this, I look at Britain and the increase in support for reform, and I don't want any part of it, and I want to be part of Ireland. So yeah, it's a sector forum, it's Irish government planning and engaging with everybody.
But that's the thing, it's progressive unionism. I mean, I know that sounds, that's what people go, oh, that's good, that's kind of, you know, but unionists seem to be set in stone. But no, there are young unionists out there who see the future, and they see it's not stuck in the 50s, 60s and 70s, and that is the only way to go forward, surely, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, look, I'll give you a prime example. Having lived in Scotland and Wales, there they protect the Indigenous languages and they support them. We have a strange scenario in Northern Ireland where the infrastructure minister, who's Sinn Féin, we've got a brand new Grand Central train station in Belfast, which is brilliant, and the infrastructure minister wants to put Irish language signs on that train station to make it bilingual, which is what you have in Scotland and Wales. And a different minister from the DUP has said he's taking a court case to try and stop that. And this is the thing, you know, we need to be, we should be engaging. Nobody should have anything to fear from the Indigenous language being treated with respect.
Absolutely. One of the, just on language, one of the unexpected Brexit benefits, Ben, I'm not sure you this, because, you know, I have goddaughters, yeah, and they go off, they're Spanish, and they go off the Spanish schools, and they traditionally they used to go to the UK, go to London, or go to somewhere, yeah, Brighton for a week intensive English, okay? But because of El Brexit now, the documentation that is needed to go to the UK to take 20 kids, 20 14-year-olds, which is how it doesn't as it is, to get over there, it's prohibitive. So they've now all started going to Ireland because they're Europeans, yeah, and get in. And the benefit, the Brexit benefit I never saw coming, is there going to be a whole generation of Spanish with wonderful Irish accents in the future?
Yeah, that's it. And, you know, and I think the whole issue about immigration, that's another reason why we need to have United Ireland, because for as long as there's a British border on the island of Ireland, you will have those in Britain and elsewhere that will try to leverage that as a weak point in negotiations with Ireland and with the EU as a whole. You know, we had Rishi Sunak, the former British Prime Minister, Conservative Prime Minister, boasting about the fact that under his Rwanda scheme, you had refugees going up through Britain, through Northern Ireland, into the Republic of Ireland. And because there was an open border between North and South, there was very little the Irish government could do. So another way that the United Ireland will help is that we'll be able to manage immigration more. I'm a big fan of immigration. I think it's great, and I think we need to do everything for our refugees that we should be doing. But we need to be able to show that we can manage that ourselves at our sea and airports, because we know the far right, and there is a small far right in Ireland.
Yes,
there's also the far right. There's a far right in Britain,
yep,
and there's a far right in America that are trying to sow dissent in Ireland. And the two key ways to try to sow dissent is through immigration and through housing. But we have a United Ireland. We can deliver more on housing, and we can reassure people, some who have genuine concerns, we can reassure them more that we can manage immigration effectively by having the United Ireland.
How's this been received, Ben? Because you said that, you know, amongst A, your contemporaries, but B, sort of both sides of the border as it stands at the moment.
I've had good feedback from across political parties in the Republic. I've had good feedback from some political parties in Northern Ireland. I guess I'm more. I've had some interesting comments from people from a unionist background, but you know, I expected that. But you know, people have called me a traitor and all that kind of stuff. But you know, I actually believe I'm a patriot, because I want the best for people who live here, and the best for people who live here is through United Ireland, back in the EU.
The book is called The Irish Unity Dividend. It is by Ben Cullen, who's speaking today. Listen, if you go to the TRE Books virtual bookstore and click on the front cover, it will be winging its way to you by the end of the day. It will leave the depot, apparently. Ben, if people want to follow you online or engage further in the conversation, presumably you are active on the socials, or at least have a website, where can people find you and say nice things to you, Ben?
Yes, I'm on X at BJA Collins. And the same on Blue Sky, and then I'm also on LinkedIn. I don't have an active website yet. That's still a work in progress.
Are you positive? Are you positive about the future? I mean, are you optimistic about the future? Do you think that we will see, you know, that United?
Yes. Yeah, I think we'll see it at some point in the next 10 years. But what I want is a smooth transition. And the best way we can have a smooth transition is by planning, preparing now. That addresses all the concerns. We can work through all the issues, so that whenever people go into the voting booth, they can clearly know what they're voting for. And if people want to vote for the status quo, that's fine. But what I want to know is what we have now, is this the best it's going to be? Is this our nirvana? Or are things going to get better? And if they're going to get better, tell me, how are they going to get better? Is there suddenly going to be extra money found to invest in the health service? Because there isn't at the moment. You know, we have an old Mother Hubbard government at Westminster. So, you know, but I think we have a better alternative future ahead. And I want everyone to be part of it.
The book is called The Irish Unity Dividend. It's by Ben Collins, who will be speaking to you today. Ben, it's been fascinating and illuminating to speak to you today. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Giles. Lovely to speak to you too.